And now, from beyond our dimension, this is the Jeff Mara Podcast. Here's Jeff.
My guest is Dr. Christina Donnell, author and clinical psychologist who had a near-death experience while on top of the Andes Mountains of Peru. Dr. Donnell, thank you for joining me and welcome.
Thank you, Jeff. And thank you for this interview and this forum of which we can get out sowing seeds of consciousness that expands our everyday world. So thank you so much for the interview.
Well, Christina, we're excited to have you. And if you don't mind, let's start on the day that you had this NDE and go from there.
Yes, yes. So in my latest book, I do talk about an NDE. And I've worked with the Caro Indians for 30 years. And I was in the high Andes of Peru. The Caro Indians live between 18 and 22,000 feet. Just so everyone knows, base camp for Mount Everest is 14,000 feet. So at 18,000 feet, I contracted yellow fever. I was actually there because my lover in the Andes had died from a lightning strike 3 months earlier, which put up the parental rights for my godson. And I was there to establish parental rights with the Caro Indians with my godson when I contracted yellow fever. And if anyone knows anything about yellow fever, you know, if you don't go through the second phase of it, you actually recover well. If you go through the second phase, 50% survive. And I went through the second phase at a temperature of 106 with, oh my God, a throbbing, extraordinary headache where your brain just wants to explode. And I'm at 18,000 feet elevation in a hut with no medical center nearby. And the Caro Indians took care of me, but that is where I had my near-death experience. And as I fevered, my consciousness began to move out of the body and arose to that threshold where the spirit transfers out of the body. And how I know this is because in my first book, Transcended Dreaming, and because I'm very well versed in consciousness and this threshold of death and dying, meaning I've had physicians ask me to come into hospitals and be with parents who are making very difficult decisions with taking somebody off of life support. Because I have a mystical temperament, I've had the ability to travel, be in the same place of that consciousness to know where they're at in the threshold of, are they going to leave or are they going to come back? And then help family members decide whether to pull life support or not. So my near-death experience, I already had years of being on that gorgeous, gorgeous rite of passage threshold. And I call it a training. It's a training to be there. And then here I was. I was here. And of course, I had no control. And in the place where I was so ready, because the threshold is intoxicating. As you go up and down and through a very spacious light, I know people call it a tunnel, but it is a very spacious light that is transporting and intoxicating. I knew that from all of my training with assisting others. And at that point, I was like, I can die here. This has been difficult. I can die. And then I heard. And people always go, well, how do you hear? Well, it's a sub threshold of a physical, but you're in this space. And I heard absolutely heard an illumination. I am the light behind the living word. It is now time for you to do what you were meant to be here to do. Be the mouthpiece for living language, of which meant nothing to me because I didn't understand it. And then in this beautiful, exquisite place of being in that tunnel and ready to depart, I came crashing down like a deer would go through a pond in the middle of winter. That like crash, 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 crash back into the body. It took me 6 more days with the beautiful care of the Caro Indians to recover enough to get on horseback, to get off of 18,000 feet back to Cusco and on an airplane to Minneapolis, where it took another year, maybe 18 months to convalesce and recover. And it changed my life. And this book, The Encounters with Living Language, Surrendering to the Power of Words, is a homage to that near-death experience of what I heard in that moment when I was so ready to be released from this world.
Who do you think was the source of that voice?
Right, Jeff? Jeff, I am the original light behind the living word. And what I would say is this. If I go back to my first book, Transcended Dreaming, I've been a lucid dreamer my entire life. And I speak about in Transcended Dreaming that those dream experiences come from the original creation behind the dream, the original creation energy that is manifesting every day into our world. Some people will call it God, some people will call it Source, Spirit, Allah. It goes by so many names, but it is that original energy. And I've been in touch with it my entire life. I'm very comfortable with it. I am absolutely in communion with it. It allows me to, when I'm in the experience of it, of which is what my book, The Living Language, Surrendering the Power of Words, like even language can bring us here, can bring us to this source that connects us to the one underlying creation. Some people will call that enlightening. Some people will call that awakening. Some people will call that paranormal. What I'm here to say is I've had many, many, many experiences. I'm very pragmatic about it. And I even have them in my sessions with clients as a clinical psychologist because that energy becomes available.
When you heard the voice, did it sound like a voice that was completely different from your own or like your own voice when you're thinking?
It did not come from a voice. Beautiful question. Did not come from a place of my own thinking. And as I said before, and with all the illuminations, you can say I had this clairaudient, I can never say this word, clairaudient, where you have the experience of a voice, just like in a vision. You have a vision. Nobody else can see it, but you have a vision. Same is true with hearing. You can have an experience with a frequency of hearing that is beyond our subtle realm where we're kind of capped off. So I often call that a sound underneath sound, because others would never experience it. And when you do experience it, and this is the beauty, Jeff, when you do experience it, you are in a oneness with it. You are not from a place of a me or I. You are bathed in a greater consciousness. Might be the best way I can explain it.
You were in a place that was intoxicating. And after you came back and completely healed from this fever. Were you disappointed that you were back, or were you inspired because now you had a mission?
As I said before, it took me a year to even 18 months to recover. I had fainting spells, deficits with cognition, especially with fatigue, because of a fever of 106. But more importantly, I came back, and that entire experience, and you have to remember, I lost my lover 3 months earlier. So I already was in grief. Came back, had these deficits from yellow fever. And as a clinical psychologist, you know, on the rounds of doing teaching, lectures, book talks, keynote addresses, I came back after that experience. And I do think it was from that voice, along with grief of having lost a lover, of why am I doing any of this? Why am I doing any of this? And I don't even know what it means to be a mouthpiece for language, because yes, I've loved all the great genius poets. And if anyone would ever ask me, have you read this book, read this book, read this book, current, I'd be like, oh no, I only read dead poets. So this was coming from something greater, for sure, but I had no idea what it meant. But my next year was about experiencing this complete shift from doing in the world, doing, busy, three spiritual communities, three, you know, like I just said, two. I don't know why I was doing any of that. And coming to a place of emptiness, which was actually very painful. And in that emptiness, suddenly my awareness was not centered around me. There was no center to my awareness, which then led to these illuminations, which I think came from that near-death experience. There were 92 of them. They certainly had a governing aim. Not sure where that voice would come from. I said, I think it comes from source. It comes from a frequency. It comes from a dimension of why you are here. And my next 5 years were experiences with these illuminations.
I noticed that you keep using the word illumination, and you even said you heard an illumination when you heard the voice. So yes. Can you define illumination for us?
Yes. Yes, I can. After 92, I have a good sense of an illumination. And somebody who is constitutionally been a mystical temperament my entire life. By the way, living Detroit, Minneapolis, urban in the 21st century. Not a normal place for a woman to live, but it is why I have been here. And in these 92 illuminations, I can tell you every single time, they come out of nowhere. They are external. They are not internal. They are external. When they come, the lucidity of consciousness expands, like you've gone from a dim bulb to the brightest bulb. And then the sensory system, meaning eyes, ears, touch, smell, taste, is highly sensitized. But more importantly, then the actual structure of awareness changes. I can't tell you because it comes from outside. But the structure of awareness changes into the unified whole of the oneness behind creation. And then these illuminations come in deep, deep, deep into the body. And Jeff, I will tell you, the mind is blocked. It recedes. And when it comes back up, it will cut the illumination off immediately, which tells me at a quantum level, if we want states of expanded consciousness, yes, you can get through meditation of 30 years. But at the end of the day, the conceptual mind that is trying to represent, you know, this is the tree, this is the lightning that is coming in, this is the thunder that is coming in. If it doesn't have an experience with it, it can't move into the unified whole where your body has the experience of being connected to the one. And my book is absolutely about, oh my goodness, even language can bring us here.
So are you saying that an illumination is a communication from source, like when you heard it, or is it merely just, and I don't mean to use merely in a bad way, but is it just a download of information from source?
Yes, yes. And I love the word merely because, like, let's simplify this to the degree that we can. But I do think of it differently. I think we are embedded and swimming in a quantum world from the source of creation that is playing through all of us. And it's only because of our perceptual filters, our consciousness, how we view life that limits us from everything greater. And so, I don't know, Jeff, do we call it a download? Or do we call it an opening? The crossroads where your awareness opens to that which is greater in the universe that brings in different frequencies and allows us to have different experience. And I don't know the truth. I'm not here to be a scientist for sure.
I believe at least on the other side, there's some sort of unified field of all knowledge. And sometimes near-death experiencers connect with that and almost know everything, but they can't bring it back.
And Jeff, I believe that unified field of experience is right here now. Right here now, available, emerging in all the tumult of our world. It's right here. It doesn't require a near-death experience. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
So can we connect with it, or is it something that just happens spontaneously?
Yes, I have many people ask me, could you write a how-to book? And of course, I cannot, right? Don't even know, because it comes outside. It's so spontaneous. My mind recedes and I have the experience. I wrote this little note. I must have thought it was important. And I said, there is a time for certain ideas to arrive, and they find a way to express themselves through us. And I believe Encounters with Living Language is a book. I believe our interview is that the source, the creation, has created this moment where these ideas can arrive. I cannot give the how-to, but what I can say is that every time you read something and the hair goes up on your neck, because you had an experience with the word, or you're speaking with a beloved or a partner, or in exchange, even in a radio interview, where you have full body chills. That is this movement of which we've not spoken much about, of the living word, right? The living word. In the beginning was the word. And I would say, no, in the beginning was the silence. And then there was the word. The word. The word is not just language. The word is the beautiful rivers, the lightning, the thunder, of which was here right before interview. That is the living word of creation. And this book is about, I don't want to use the word illuminating, but presenting that possibility from a frequency outside of us, of which I have the privilege of being the womb of the unseen in the manifest world. It's why I'm here. Boom. It's why I'm here. And there is no how-to, but when the we know from meditation, when the conceptual mind recedes, this is a tree, this is the FedEx that just pulled up, this is that, this is that. And when we actually just take in our surroundings, Krishnamurti, like all of our great spiritual teachers have talked about this, where you no longer are just about the knowledge, but the experience underneath, interior trap doors open in the body. We know it's quantum, right? It's all made of atoms. Create this opportunity for an expanded awareness. And latent capabilities, prophecy, clairvoyance, telepathy. I've had the experience through the 92 illuminations, and I'm watching a really young generation of Asperger's, autism spectrum, who already have that capacity but are nonverbal. So it says to me that there is an evolution going on in our species where this is just one possibility. It's one possibility.
I really like that you pointed out that when you have an illumination or a connection, that your body has some sort of visceral response to it.
Yes.
Which to me, I guess, would validate it. But let me ask you this. For example, I was thinking about Mars, and I was thinking that perhaps humans lived on Mars thousands and thousands of years ago, and we've eventually moved from Mars to Earth, and part of the population ended up being slaves to another part of the population, just kind of like this sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah.
When I was thinking about it, I had a visceral thought, like, or a feeling like, wow, that it feels like this was so real.
Beautiful.
I bet this what really happened thousands of years ago. So when you think about something like that and have a visceral response, is that validating that it was real?
And what does validating mean in the world that we live in, right? Is it empiricism? Is it scientific method? Is it phenomenology? Is it what's real? And I would say from the source of creation, it's all real. Whatever perceptual filter someone is moving from, I sit with people every day, thousands and thousands and thousands of consultations with people, moving in their perceptual filter of what is real. But what I would say is, if we just think about evolution and we think about Homo erectus, no precognitive, couldn't conceptualize, couldn't just think, all visceral, all instinctual, all survival meant on this extraordinary, exquisite body that could be attuned to whatever was going on. Then precognitive human species arrived. We are in its full zenith. I'm only going to speak about America here because my experiences with indigenous cultures are different. But in America, we're down technology, we're down sound bites, we're down AI, we're all in the mind, all in the mind. We are not in the experience of the body. Don't know if this is true, but what I am interested about in creation over, you know, millennia. Where is, was the disconnection from what came before us and where we are now? Because that disconnection was so attuned instinctually and intuitively from the place of the body. And here is where I muse. Given I hear from the autistic spectrum, nonverbal speakers who suddenly through some technique called letterboarding are contacting me, they're contacting me and saying extraordinary things, even though they've been non-speakers from the day of birth and still are, because their development doesn't, but they have telepathy. They can speak multiple languages of which they've never been exposed to from their parents. When they contact me, they say, I'm here to be the space to rattle others. They don't say, I'm here to be a doctor. I'm here to be anything. I'm here to be the space that rattles others. This, to me, tells me the species is evolving. And this is one possibility where the sensory experience, because we all know with the Asperger's spectrum, their sensory system is so sensitive that they can't function in this culture. And it gives me pause. It makes me go, oh, yeah, it's interesting. And I'm here to be the mouthpiece for language. And I've been a mystical temperament from the day I was born. And I'm also really pragmatic. So I feel like I might be a bridge to this possibility in the world. And all of us taking in an exchange where we don't immediately conceptualize, and it comes in. Just like music, it comes in and plays us, meaning the conceptual mind may have reached its zenith.
What do you mean by this person connected with you with a letter board?
Oh, yes. So, and forgive me because I don't. It's just like you write a book and you get certain audiences, right? So I'm less familiar with it. But we have an entire autistic 10% of young children on a spectrum who are not adaptive right now in the culture. And we have, and many of those are non-speakers, meaning they can't verbalize. They can't function adaptively. But letter boarding, a technique recently, allows them with training to train sensory system to the letter boarding to communicate their responses to questions asked. And what has happened over this 10 years of this proliferation is that all whom are doing the letterboarding and teaching these young spectrum children, that their knowledge is extraordinary. They are not delayed. They are actually exceeding intellectually their age group. They are speaking in terms of sentience where color, sound, taste reveals direct perception. They are telepathic, clairvoyant, mediums, and as I said before, speaking several languages of which they've never been exposed to. So that what that says to me is in that whole nonverbal, where they couldn't be nonverbal, they were in a full experience with a unified whole behind creation, and they are on the planet not adaptive at the moment, but they are on the planet to bring this forward. And like my book, Living Language, I make it really clear in Living Language, the conceptual mind has to recede. The interior trap doors of the body need to open and expand. Every sensory has to expand. And then you can have an experience with something greater than our everyday, really narrow consciousness. I hope that answers your question, because I don't really understand letter boarding, mm-hmm. but I know. And I've had speakers from India to the United States contact me and say, thank you so much for this book, because it actually spoke. And they couldn't read it. Their parents had to read it.
Is it something simply as they just point to letters and spell words out, or point yes. to words?
Yes. And then they get proficient enough, they can actually be on a computer. Hmm. And still, for whatever reason, in on that spectrum, there is a sensory motor difficulty with voice, right? Voice. That's interesting, right? This voice that could be in the world and be adaptive, it's not adaptive right now. So all of the communication comes, they have to use the letter boarding to let this world know where they're at. But they're not in the 3D world. They are in the multidimensional and quantum world.
You've had 92 illuminations. Can you give us a couple more examples of your most impactful ones?
Well, surely my near-death experience was one.
Is there one that just transcended you?
Well,
besides
that was the mega, right? All of them do. All of them do, because Jeff, think about this for a moment. Your conceptual mind is unavailable while you're having the experience. They're all transporting. They're all deeply transporting. I'm a Virgo. I'm pragmatic. I don't like things coming out of nowhere. I like to have control, but you have no control. So they're all transporting. I might go to when I was in the Andes, a different time. I had recovered from yellow fever. I was there because my godson was lost, herding alpaca at 22,000 feet. And he'd been lost for 3 days, 7 years old. I came in. You know, I'm in Minneapolis. It's a 30, 35 hour plane time change. I arrive in Cusco and I go to my beautiful friends, Miguel and Rosa, their home. Miguel himself is a healer. When I arrive, his healing room, Adobe, this is third world, right? Third world, Adobe, is filled, all the seats taken with people who are seeking his care. In the middle of the room is a Native woman dying of birth complications. It's all, right? It's all just a part of the earth. I'm 40 hours without sleep, and I take a poncho, some cocoa tea, because we're at altitude at this point, of which I don't come from, and I sit on corn stalks, a bag of corn stalks, while all this is going on. And I'm there because my godson is lost higher up in the Andes at 20,000 feet, of which I have to acclimate to the altitude. So I just close my eyes. I'm sleep deprived. And I have an illumination. And the illumination, I can't recall it at this moment because I've had 92, was like, be still. May your heart be quiet. And may you enter the light behind creation. And in that moment, I was just saying prayers that my godson would be found safe, of which in the book, you will find that he wasn't. But I was sitting there with that illumination that came in. Again, the quality and the structure of awareness changes. And all of a sudden, I am with the light, right? I've already had the instruction, be the mouthpiece, I'm the light behind the world with a near-death experience. I've already had that instruction. Suddenly, with this one, I am experiencing that light. And now my cognitive mind is offline. I can't access it. This is the illuminations do not allow accessing the cognitive mind. It shuts it off. I'm in a full body experience, and I feel the wind. I feel the dark corners of the room. I feel as the wind, there's like one light bulb in this small adobe illuminating the room. I feel the wind come in. I feel the wind actually in harmony with this woman taking some of her, in the middle of the room, last breaths due to birth complication. And I feel the unified whole of it, not from my mind, but that I am participatory and in the experience of it in my body. People talk about non-dual awareness, unity consciousness, but they talk about it from the mind. I talk about it from, oh no, that isn't the full surround sound. When it comes into the body, you have a full experience of seeing the harmonious nature of how all nature is working together. And that was one moment that was stands out for me.
If we just kind of step back, and you have had this experience where you've been out of your body, so you have certainty that, you know, we are not our body and consciousness is eternal. What is the point of coming here to the earth, in your opinion?
Look at my silence. I think the source of creation has its own perfection and bringing that which is unmanifest into the manifestation. When I say source of creation, some people would call that God. That's God. It's all God. It's all God. The horrific things that happen, the beautiful things that happen, the out-of-body experiences that happen, but coming back to talk about those experiences, the tumult of our where we are in the world right now, pandemics, it's all God. It's all God. It's all the source of creation to me, playing into the manifestation as it continues to evolve. And that is my answer. It's not personal. It's transpersonal. It's greater than us.
You've kind of mentioned this earlier, but when you are on the other side, you can get to a point where you are blending with God. I think those were your words.
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying that we are God, all of us collectively?
Yes, yes, yes. And I'm saying a near-death experience gives you the experience. I would say my training in medical centers with people on life support gave me that training. And I would say this book in the 92 Illuminations gave me the experience in the body while I'm here without having to die.
I believe you said earlier that you could tell whether a person was going to stay or not when you were at their bedside. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
How could you do that?
You know, my first book, Transcendent Dreaming, will talk about being a lucid dreamer my entire life, since really early age, preschool. So my awareness has always had the capacity to be in two places at once and to be present and aware and in union and oneness as a generator or a catalyst. And my first book talks about that. And so those years of training, I can't tell you why I can close my eyes. I've been a meditator for 23 years, no, 30 years, but this exceeded my meditation training, that I can simply be with souls where they are at in the thresholds and the frequencies and dimensions easily. My awareness can be in multiple places at once, actually. That is not some training. It just is since I was 4 years old, probably since I was born. And so, yes, I loved that I could, a physician would call me, you know, my good physicians that know I'm not your normal clinical psychologist, and say, hey, will you be with this family and help them make decisions? And when I would be with people who are on life support, and I would move into the space in which they were at, I knew whether they were fighting to be here, I am already out of here, or I'm on the threshold. And we know just the fact that this awareness is there supports whatever decision they are making. But the gift was that I could come back and say to family, this was my experience, and this is where they were at. And two or three, so far out there, I couldn't even be there without leaving with them. So, because having your awareness in multiple places taxes the body.
How would you describe a transcendent human?
Somebody who has the ability to move beyond the conceptual mind and be in the experience of the unseen that is manifesting in the world, and to bring it back and be sane, be rational, to transcend and bring back the unseen, which is holding up through all the unseen forces that are inciting every moment, to bring that back and bring it back to our rational world. If you are a transcendent human, but you can't maintain your rationality or your pragmatism, Well, we call that mental illness here. But if you can be in those places and bring it back, it offers hope and sows seeds of expanding consciousness.
Do you think schizophrenia could possibly be where a person is within this unified field and they can't control it and can't handle it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just like the spectrum children right now who are not adaptive. There are many other cultures that might handle schizophrenia very differently than we do, but we are a fast culture. Sound bite, rational, boom, surface consciousness. We don't have room for the rest, which makes it very hard for anyone who came in, right, source of creation, with some other gift, but there's no room for it. It's not adaptive. Think of our mental health culture. Always looking at, is this adaptive or is this not? But I would say yes. I think schizophrenia is so unexplored that they are absolutely in a paranormal experience of which we could honor, but we don't keep them safe. And the culture is not safe because it moves too fast. It simply moves too fast. You put them in an indigenous culture, my God, they might be a shaman. Right? Might be a shaman. There might be room for that eccentricity. And what I would also say is I get a lot of referrals for people who are having, whether it's a bipolar experience into psychosis, right? Or a kundalini experience into psychosis, I get referrals to help differentiate and how to best treat. And I'm telling you, that line is very thin. It's very thin. And to me, I like to say, we have the sane, we have the insane, and we have the super sane. And are you going to be insane or are you going to be super sane? And in order to be super sane, you have to be able to be adaptive and bring it back to the culture.
Do you think using psychedelics like ayahuasca and DMT is a dangerous game that people play that can lead them into psychosis if they're not careful?
My dear Jeff, we might have to have a glass of wine over this question. Right? we might need to move beyond coffee. I've never done any psychedelics. I'm wired to like, oh my gosh, I don't need to. Yet I have three shamanic communities. San Francisco, Minneapolis, Seattle, all of whom some have dabbled there and I follow them. I do consultation with them and I'm really open to psychedelics. And I even believe marijuana. So psilocybin, ketamine, all they are medicines of the earth, right? They are of the earth. They are here to shift consciousness. Following 20 years, following my clients who dabble, following my clients who microdose in order to treat lifelong depression, which is interesting to me, I would say this, if it's a one-off because you want to have a wild experience, it's not going to change your life. If it's a 5 times in a year, one-off, you're going to get a lot of information. It's not going to change your experience. If you microdose over time, it's changing your brain chemistry for you to lay down information in a different way that allows you to expand consciousness. And right now, a lot of what is offered is not microdosing with consultation.
From most of my guests who have experienced things like ayahuasca, the reaction has been positive, but I do stuff out there that some read stuff and or hear reports too that people get PTSD from it.
I get both. I get extraordinary healing in the moment, and I get people who suddenly realize they are an incest survivor from their father, and it's brought up something they were unprepared for. And it's exceedingly traumatic while they're trying to be adaptive in the world. I get both. That's the power of medicine, right? That is the power of our quantum multidimensional world. And these are medicines from the earth.
How can people become more aware of the quantum tool that our body is?
Jeff, we need another interview. When I work with my spiritual communities in meditation, I do a guided meditation into the quantum nature of our body, into the atoms, which are, our body. We think it's all physical and we're in our surface mind, but the truth of the matter is, it's made up of 100 trillion to an exponential amount of atoms that are 99.9% space. And you do know the atom bomb, one atom, the power of an atom. An atom, neutron, proton, electron, orbit. All of which 100 trillion plus in the body, that electron orbit can move to an infinity of frequency or dimension in the body, which is what allows for transformation. And so when I train spiritually, I'm all about an experience out of the body. Let's come in to the gift and the medicine and the power and the quantum nature of the body. And I train from there. I train from meditations that open up that electron orbit to frequency in a different way while remaining homeostasis. Yes, it's unconventional.
With your limited experience on the other side, do you believe in reincarnation?
I wouldn't say I have a limited experience on the other side. Right. I had one experience, but I have many experiences with coexisting with others in that space. Which is unique. It's unique. But
I didn't mean to belittle your experience. I'm just saying that you spent a certain amount of time on the other side during your NDE.
But I would say limited in that it's just phenomenological. It's limited in that it's not, doesn't come from a scientific background. But here's my problem. It's always in how the question is framed, because it's not that I believe or don't believe in karma or past lives. It's that when you no longer live in a world that is based on past, present, and future. Past lives breaks down. It has to become something else. You know, I talk about in the Illuminations, one of the first the structure and awareness changes, past, present, and future suddenly are present all in the same moment. And you are participatory in that moment, and you're live in that moment. That is a different consciousness. And it makes you have to think about our everyday world that talks about karma or past lives differently, because there's no past. So now it is the quantum soup of simultaneous dimensions and energies occurring. And that is how I work with and respect what is the energy behind past life and the energy behind karma, because I absolutely do believe those energies are on the planet playing out through all of us. And I spend at least three times a week in consultation telling people, this is not really yours from this lifetime. You are carrying it for your ancestors to bring it forward.
I guess I should have phrased the question in this way. In your opinion, what do you think happens to us after we transition? Do we blend with Source and stay there for a while and heal and come back?
One, I don't have an opinion. Two, I play in beliefs. I absolutely know not to be owned by any belief. And I really love the unknown and the mystery, and I'm wide open to it.
I believe quite a few people in the audience are people who are grieving over the loss of loved ones. Mm-hmm. What kind of advice can you give them?
Our time on the earth, there are many times that we suffer very deeply, very deeply. And what I tell all my clients, only because of through my experience, I lost both my parents before the age of 40. And I lost a lover, and then I lost my godson. I've had a lot of losses. What I've learned from losses, and as I hold space for those who are in the acute grief of loss, is that the wisdom gained after month after month after month after month, the wisdom gained is the greatest gift to your soul, but it's exceedingly painful. Suffering is painful, but there is wisdom that emerges through the suffering that only time allows.
I guess you could say that the wisdom that you gain from the suffering can only be gained through the suffering.
Oh, beautiful, 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 Jeff. Couldn't be said more poignant. It's true. It's true. And nobody wants to hear that when they're in the deepest places of grief. But it is a truth. It is a pith of truth. And it grows human souls up.
Well, Dr. Donnell, due to time, I'm going to switch gears with you. If people have questions for you, are you open to that? And if so, how can they reach you?
I love questions. I love comments. They can reach us at our website, christinadonnell.com. And they can just hit the contact form and send an inquiry. or they can email me, ChristinaDonnell.com@gmail.com, and send me an inquiry. We love to hear from our viewers. We love to hear from them, and we will answer every question.
Well, you have several books out. Can we find all of them on Amazon?
Yes, of course, Amazon. Yes, yes. Or the website. If you go to the website, they're also there, but they're also on Amazon. Best place to reach them.
Do you have anything else that you're working on that you want us to know about?
I am actually working on my third book, which is about the sacred life, the unified field through meditation. And it really takes the reader, and it's in my spiritual community. It's actually, there are two audio series that are very popular with our three communities that takes them through kind of three stages through meditation of getting beyond surface consciousness and getting to the silence and emptiness, which is really uncomfortable, and then into the realm, which is more quantum, that allows something else and gives you an experience of the oneness underneath the universe. So I'm working on that right now.
All right. Do you have a YouTube channel?
We do. And I might have to get it to you before you release the interview.
All right. Send me a link and I'll put it in the description.
Okay. I will do that. We do. We do for sure.
Well, before we finish up, can you leave us with one last positive message?
We are here living this life now in the simultaneity of it all worldwide. We will never experience it again in this body. May we find the gift every day and the gratitude to be here, to experience it through our joy, through our suffering, and through our pain. It is a gift.
Dr. Donnell, thank you for your message, and thank you for being my guest.
And thank you, Jeff, for the interview. I loved our morning tea together.
Thank you. It was a fascinating conversation. Thanks for watching the Jeff Mara podcast. I really appreciate you. Another way to show support is through YouTube memberships. And if you do, there are loyalty badges and other perks depending on your level of membership. All you need to do is click the join button underneath the video to find out more. Thank you for your support.